The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Achievements at the 2014 Special Olympics Canada Games, and extend best wishes to all members of Team Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, ask for waiver, notice, and passage without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? I hear several no's. The motion is tabled. No more notices of motion. We'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 7:18. We'll conclude at 8:18. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Speaker, and good morning. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Premier. Nova Scotians expect this government to get the health merger right. No one more so than the patients that rely on that system every day. Mr. Speaker, the health experts that we have spoken to over the last little while all say that the best way to proceed is to take it one step at a time, to ensure that there is a proper merger of health management, and then move on to realigning the health care unions, Mr. Speaker. And that way, there isn't too much turmoil at the same time, and patient care will always be paramount. But that's not the way the government has chosen to proceed. They've picked one bill right now, all at once, with all the turmoil that that entails. And so I'd like to ask the Premier, Mr. Speaker, how can he assure Nova Scotians, particularly those that are in our health care system, that their care will be protected when he has chosen the most disruptive method of proceeding?
Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, the Leader of the Conservative Party suggests we're not going fast enough. Now today he accuses us of going too fast, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this bill is about protecting patients, it's about protecting workers, Mr. Speaker, and most of all, Mr. Speaker, it's about ensuring that this health care system is sustainable into the future.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, there are times when I have to say this government is a hard one to even agree with because, of course, they campaigned on a pledge to merge the health authorities. We campaigned on a pledge to merge the health authorities. We're prepared to work on getting that done, Mr. Speaker. Whether it's fast or slow is not the issue. Getting it right and protecting patients while this happens is the issue that's at question today, Mr. Speaker. And many Nova Scotians are watching as we meet here at 7 o'clock this morning, wondering what's the rush. Why all the turmoil all at once, Mr. Speaker? What is the deadline that the government has set and why? Well, Mr. Speaker, we know that last spring the Premier brought a bill into this House that he, on the one hand, told healthcare workers would preserve their right to strike, but on the other hand, he told Nova Scotians he was ending strikes in healthcare. Fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, it turns out there is a deadline. There is another strike in health care coming our way very soon with Capital Health nurses. And so I'd like to ask the Premier if he will just admit to this House that the reason for the rush is that his plan on health care strikes from last spring didn't get the job done, and he's trying to paper that over with this bill today.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, last spring we brought in essential service piece of legislation, Mr. Speaker. We respected the rights of workers in this province to strike, Mr. Speaker. At the same time, we were respecting the right of patients to understand in their community they'd have core health care services no matter what happened as bargaining. Speaker, this piece of legislation about is bringing together 9 district health authorities under one employer. Mr. Speaker, we have negotiated and talked with major unions across this province. They told us very loud and clearly they all wanted to be preserved, Mr. Speaker. That bill does that, Mr. Speaker. At the same time, it respects the collective agreements, the things that workers have earned. No worker will lose, Mr. Speaker, anything. At the same time, Mr. Speaker, it makes this system sustainable in the long run.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know how the Premier can tell healthcare workers that nothing will change and tell all Nova Scotians that everything has changed all at the same time. Fact is, we want to make sure that the health merger goes through properly and correctly, in a timely manner, in an orderly way that puts patient care first and protects patient care. But causing more confusion is not the way to do that. Just on the weekend, Mr. Speaker, the government changed its position on how it's going to handle health workers' ability to organize two times. First, they said they're going to legislate it. Then they said, oh, no, that was a mistake. We're not going to legislate it. We're going to deal with it a different way. And now we know it's going to go to a mediator, Mr. Speaker. It creates confusion. It makes people wonder if the government actually has the ability to get this done in an orderly fashion. So my question to the Premier, Mr. Speaker, who has changed his message to healthcare workers three times on the weekend alone, why wasn't he just upfront with them in the first place on his plans for their ability to organize?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm very proud of the work that the Minister of Health has done. I'm very proud of the work that this government has done. I'm very pleased with the work that the union leaders have done, Mr. Speaker, in supporting us to get to this point around this piece of legislation. This protects workers' rights, Mr. Speaker. It protects patients, and it protects the system.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question for you is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, prior to the election last year, the Premier told CTV's Steve Murphy during a leaders' debate that he wanted to be remembered as someone who kept the promises he made during the election. And Mr. Speaker, prior to the election, the Premier ran an open letter in the Chronicle Herald where he specifically promised to maintain all existing healthcare collective agreements. And I'll table that letter, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, can the Premier please explain why he has broken this promise by having an arbitrator determine which collective agreements are kept and which are discarded?
The Honourable Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I would encourage the Honourable Member to actually read the bill, Mr. Speaker. The arbitrator will determine who, is, Mr. Speaker, is in the four categories which the union leaders agreed upon, Mr. Speaker. Anything else will happen at the bargaining table, but no health care worker in this province, Mr. Speaker, is losing anything associated with this piece of legislation.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, that's why there's nobody outside this House of Assembly, I guess. Mr. Speaker, in the same pre-election open letter, the Premier promised to respect the rights of nurses and healthcare workers. Today, Mr. Speaker, I'd say it's safe to say healthcare workers in the province of Nova Scotia aren't feeling all that respected by this government. So my question for the Premier is this. Why has he chosen to throw the entire healthcare system into upheaval by forcing mergers and suspending bargaining rights instead of adopting the solutions that were provided to him by the four healthcare unions?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I wonder if the Honourable Member could enlighten this House what was actually provided by the four union leaders, Mr. Speaker. They were proposing the status quo, Mr. Speaker. And that is one thing, and when they were in government, Mr. Speaker, even that member didn't agree with.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much. I believe that the four unions were proposing the model that's working quite well in BC, and we're very prepared to bring the collective agreements down to four. But, Mr. Speaker, that's not the point. The point is the legislation that we now have in front of us. Mr. Speaker, in the ad that I previously tabled, the Premier promised healthcare workers that he would respect all their hard-earned rights and collective agreements. Mr. Speaker, my question for the Premier is this. How does taking away the rights of healthcare workers to determine who speaks for them respect all of their rights?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, this bill doesn't do that, Mr. Speaker. And let me be clear to the leader of the NDP party. What was brought forward by the union leaders was not the BC model, Mr. Speaker. In BC, unions come together, Mr. Speaker, in separate, and then they send one person to bargain at the table with government. What was being proposed by the union leaders is that they all come to the table, bargain on the things that they can agree with, and then we set aside side tables to negotiate the things individually. How is that any different than what we have in front of us, Mr. Speaker? What this bill is about is protecting the right that workers have earned, protecting the things that they've earned at the bargaining table. This bill will do so. It will also ensure that patients can ensure that health care services are there, Mr. Speaker, and it will ensure that the system is sustainable in the long run for all Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Opposition House Leader.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. In 2007, while in opposition, the Premier said that labour issues in Nova Scotia are not the cause of problems in our healthcare system. He explained that patients feel the same, He explained that patients feel the same problems in our healthcare system about a shortage of doctors, nurses, and wait times. He went on to say that picking a fight with our health care workers is not ensuring that Nova Scotians have access to the quality health care that they expect each and every one of us here and each and every one of us here to protect and deliver for them. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier, if picking a fight with health care workers doesn't protect health services for Nova Scotians, then why has the Premier put on his boxing gloves?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure where the honourable member is coming from on his question. This bill, Mr. Speaker, is about protecting workers' rights. This piece of legislation ensures that every worker will retain the rights that they've earned at the bargaining table, Mr. Speaker. At the same time, it's protecting patients, making sure the system is there. The system will be there for them in the long run. And, Mr. Speaker, it's make sure it's affordable for all Nova Scotians.
Yeah. Honourable member for Argyle-Barrington on his first supplementary.
Thank you very much. On that same day, the Premier asked the then former Premier to abandon his campaign against unionized healthcare workers and get down to the real issues facing Nova Scotians when it comes to healthcare. So my question, I'll ask the Premier the same question, is high time this government thought about patients. Will the Premier get down to the real issues facing Nova Scotians in healthcare?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm very proud of the work that the Minister of Health has been doing in our first year in government. Mr. Speaker, we are moving forward to ensuring that health care services will be in communities across this province. Nova Scotians can expect to know what services will be there. We're working towards ensuring that we streamline administration across this province. And we're making sure, Mr. Speaker, that the system is sustainable in the long run.
The Honourable Opposition House Leader on his final supplementary.
In 2007, the Premier called a bill limiting the right to strike, quote-unquote, a cure that is worse than the disease. And I'll table that as well. This government is facing their third cure worse than the disease in less than 1 year. In light of the serious issues on the minds of Nova Scotians, does the Premier think that it's time for more turmoil in our system that this bill creates?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure where the leader or the House Leader of the Conservative Party is coming from, Mr. Speaker, but little wonder, Mr. Speaker, because no Nova Scotians know where they stand on any issues.
The Honourable House Leader for the NDP Party.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Mr. Speaker, earlier in the spring, the Minister of Health said that he wanted one union to represent all nurses and didn't want workers to vote on which union they wanted to represent them, Mr. Speaker. And I will table that those remarks. So that sparked a question for myself to the Minister of Labour, and the Minister's response, and I quote, "There is no legislation of this kind planned," and I will also table that, Mr. Speaker. So my question through you to that Minister, Mr. Speaker, is why does she think it's okay to tell healthcare workers one thing and do the exact opposite?
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. Yes, Mr. Speaker, I did make those comments, but I would note that the member in question asked me if I had any plans to introduce legislation, and I did not. I further went on to indicate that I had never spoken to the Minister of Health about this issue. So that, Mr. Speaker, is why I said what I did.
The Honourable House Leader for the NDP Party.
Well, Mr. Speaker, that's the first piece of information we got from this government in a long time, is that the Minister of Labour is out of the loop. So, Mr. Speaker, I want to ask the Minister of Labour, the Minister promised Nova Scotians, and I quote, "This government will respect the desires of healthcare unions in which unions they want to belong," Mr. Speaker, and I'll also table that. So I want to ask through you, Speaker, will the Minister please explain how the government is keeping this commitment?
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. As I indicated at that time, I had had no conversations with the Minister of Health about any potential legislation. I did know, Mr. Speaker, that this government was concerned about the concerns of health workers, and I knew that we would want to consult with them, and that's what happened during the summer. Yes. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader, House Leader for the NDP Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, you know, it kind of amazed me when I saw the bill yesterday and I saw that everything from mediation to arbitration landed on the lap of the Minister of Health and not the Minister of Labour. Now I understand how that loop works, Mr. Speaker. It's a very small loop. So, Mr. Speaker, instead of approving Healthline care, this government is causing chaos in the very system it says it wants to protect. So through you, Mr. Speaker, when will the Minister and her government wake up and realize they've got their priorities all wrong?
The Honourable Minister of Labour.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Unfortunately, consensus was not reached during the conversations this summer. My role going forward will be to assist the parties if they need an arbitrator. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, the Liberal government's political decision to outright ban shale gas development has drawn much criticism, particularly from the members of Dr. Wheeler's expert panel. In fact, one of the members, Brad Hayes, who's an expert in this area, says, and I quote, "They saw fit to impose a ban on fracturing, which was not recommended in the report, without spending even a week to carefully consider the findings and recommendations presented to them," and I will table that for the benefit of the Premier, Mr. Speaker, in a moment here. Mr. Speaker, my question is, why did the government spend over $100,000 on an expert report only to throw it out without even trying?
Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I appreciate the question. Let me be clear. Mr. Speaker, Dr. Wheeler and his committee went around the province, spoke to Nova Scotians. Nova Scotians came out loud and clearly, raised concerns about there was more to learn about whether or not the province of Nova Scotia wanted to have hydraulic fracturing in this province. The Minister of Energy responded, listening to those Nova Scotians. There's a bill before this House. There will be a debate about that piece of legislation, and I would encourage the leader of the Conservative Party to actually do something he's never done. Pause, read the bill, understand what's actually happening.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I read the Wheeler report. I've been following this with great interest. I've spent all summer speaking to many Nova Scotians who have family members working out west and wish they were here working. Mr. Speaker, I would encourage the Premier to listen to what Nova Scotia families are saying about the greatest issue of our time, which is why they're split up with so many people working out west who could just as easily be working here in Nova Scotia if the government had just a little bit of courage and take the Wheeler report at its word and take a look at something that could actually unite Nova Scotia families, Mr. Speaker. But instead, the government has sent a very clear message that this province is closed for business. That's what the bill says, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotia is closed for business. Well, Saskatchewan is a province that is open for business. And you know what the Premier of Saskatchewan says, Mr. Speaker? And I'll just quote. He said, "Here are the incidents that we found related to fracking. Our kids are coming home. They are starting new businesses. We have jobs being created for young people." That is the experience of the province of Saskatchewan, Mr. Speaker. So I believe the Premier has a duty to at least take a look at ways to create new jobs and do something that's new for him and do something positive that actually grows Nova Scotia instead of shrinking it. So my question to the Premier is, will he explain to all those Nova Scotia families who want to be united working here at home why he has said no to one of the new ways of creating jobs?
Honourable Premier.
Speaker, one of the things the report says, I'm not even sure we have shale gas of any quantity, Mr. Speaker. The Minister of Energy, under his leadership in the department, for now over 6 months, have been doing what happened in our offshore, which is mapping Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, to actually find out if we have the resource. The only thing the piece of legislation says, if we're going to, Mr. Speaker, do hydraulic fracturing, we should actually reach out and talk to Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, unless the Premier proposes to borrow more taxpayers' money from our children and drill himself, there is not going to be any exploration on how big the resource is, that opportunity that Nova Scotians may or may not have, as long as he comes forward and says no to new ways of creating new jobs. Mr. Speaker, the Wheeler Report did not say ban it. It said go slow, but go. But that's not what the government is doing. And so I will ask the Premier, did he at least explain to Dr. Wheeler and his panel why he decided so quickly to say no to new ways to create jobs?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we're going to do what Nova Scotia's asked us to do, Mr. Speaker, is make sure that when we act, we do it right. And, Mr. Speaker, we're going to do that in this case as well.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, 1 year ago, the Premier was promising his health merger scheme would save Nova Scotians $13 million in the first year alone. Last week, the Minister of Health guessed the savings might be $1 million or something. Yesterday, the Health Minister changed that figure again to be about $5 million. So my question, Mr. Speaker, to the Premier is this. Will he please explain how his Minister of Health has landed on the $5 million figure, as tenuous as that may be?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm very pleased and proud of the work that the Minister of Health and the Department and all Nova Scotians who have been engaged in this process of merging the nine district health authorities. We're going from nine CEOs to one. We'll have a substantial reduction in vice presidents. Mr. Speaker, that money will be reused to apply to put back into frontline health care services. Mr. Speaker, not only will this change be more cost-effective for Nova Scotians, it will make the system more accessible to all Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, as the Premier well knows, and we all know, health care is government's single largest expenditure. It takes up close to 45-46% of the provincial budget. And arguably, it's the biggest concern and the highest priority for most Nova Scotians. So, Mr. Speaker, I wonder if the Premier could tell us how much it costs to run the acute care system for 1 year.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I can tell you in the last 4 years under the NDP government did nothing but rise, Mr. Speaker. Unfortunately, the former finance minister knew that challenge, Mr. Speaker, and did so by walking out the door. The fact of the matter is we've been given a mandate in this province to run the finances of this province to ensure that essential services are there that are required. That's exactly what we're going to do. And I believe the answer to the question is somewhere between $2 and $2.5 million.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, the answer to the previous question is that the total DHA budget is about $1.6 billion for this year. That means $4.5 million per day, $12,464 per hour, and $207 per minute. Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Health is now saying that this scheme that's throwing the system into chaos will save approximately $5 million. So I want to ask the Premier, how can he justify complete health care chaos and upheaval for only 1 day and a few hours' worth of health care, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, no wonder Nova Scotians don't want to relive the last 4 years, Mr. Speaker, under the Democratic Party. Mr. Speaker, no one is saying this is easy. No one is saying this is easy on anyone, Mr. Speaker. No one is saying this is easy on anyone, and there aren't challenges. As a matter of fact, every Nova Scotian is going to have to be part.
Order, please. The Honourable Premier has the floor.
As a matter of fact, every Nova Scotian is going to have to be part of moving this province back to sustainability. The fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, this change is not only about saving money in the health care system,
It is about making the system more accessible for more Nova Scotians. Why would they want to continue to build walls up in a healthcare system for people less than a million people, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. On August 12th, an order in Council was approved granting $1.15 million to purchase a CT scanner for the Inverness Hospital. There has been no tender posted on the Nova Scotia procurement website, and this means the public is unable to access the terms of this agreement. What is most concerning is the lack of transparency around such a significant purchase. Can the Minister explain the lack of transparency in the procurement of the CT scanner?
Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I'm just wondering, do we have 45 minutes or an hour? Because I have long answers and short answers. But explain a little bit for the House this very, very important and significant purchase for the people of Inverness and area. And I'm very proud that our Premier, no matter who owns the seat, he keeps his commitment to the people of Nova Scotia. In fact, Mr. Speaker, it's right in line with this whole plan that obviously the leader of the NDP party has missed. And that is, the restructuring is not so much about all of these savings, but it's how we'll have a highly integrated healthcare system from one end of the province to the other. But in terms of the CT scanner, to the member from Inverness, there is within the Department of Health the opportunity to actually use the procurement with a company when you have purchased one or two of an item, to then be able to get a third or fourth for the province, and in fact, at the very best price possible. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I can't believe the Minister of Health has just suggested that people of Inverness should be thankful that they're getting a piece of medical equipment, even though they didn't vote for this government in the last election. Mr. Speaker, it amazes me that a statement like that would be made by the Minister of Health. There have been meetings in the community that question whether the scanner selected by the province actually meets the community's needs, including from the Chief of Staff at the hospital. Now, Mr. Speaker, despite these concerns, the government has pushed ahead and acquired the scanner it's deemed best. Now the government wants the community's money. Will the government forgive the 25% portion of the cost for the rest of the scanner, or will review options and return the scanner if that is what is preferred by the community?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I thank the member opposite for the question. The one certainty that I do have, Mr. Speaker, is that the good people of Inverness and area want this scanner. They want this addition to the medical diagnostic work that goes on in their community. And this scanner will indeed serve the needs of the people in that area of the province for many years to come. In terms of the 75-25, that is the current structure that we have in the province for procuring equipment, doing capital projects. That 25%, I believe, will be gladly paid out by the people of Inverness.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm not so sure if that's true. I know in a recent community meeting, people were very upset when the District Health Authority promised to provide a transparent breakdown of the costs and yet refused the very next day. And upon further probing by an organization called Engaged Inverness, continued to refuse to provide basic information. And then we see a letter in the paper by the minister saying, "We believe we purchased the scanner that is best for the hospital," without consultation with the very people that are going to be using it, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, that doesn't ring with me. And I will ask the minister again, given the situation that has been created here, where we now have a CT scanner sitting wrapped in plastic in the basement of the hospital because the hospital is not even ready to receive it and put it into use, how is the minister going to raise the remaining 25% cost for this machine?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I know that foundations across Nova Scotia do outstanding work. In fact, we would not have the delivery system we have today without all Nova Scotians at some point in time contributing to foundations. It's obvious the member opposite doesn't quite understand the procurement process. You don't go out and do one-off with a private company that may or may not be here in a couple of years' time. I'm very familiar with their scanner. I've been out to the company to take a look and see how it does operate. And I think on the private side of medicine, they will do some complementary work for our healthcare system. But when you're procuring for the entire province, you just don't do a one-off. And also have a company come in the side door to try to become a part of the healthcare system. There'll be an opportunity. There'll be an opportunity for the new health board, a competency-based board, that can decide on that kind of policy for possible future procurement. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. A little over a year ago, the Premier, the leader of the Liberal Party, promised to create upheaval in the healthcare system by taking local decision-making away from communities and at the same time creating labour unrest. So I'd like to ask the Premier, will the Premier tell us if he believes the Liberal scheme in healthcare is creating upheaval within the healthcare sector?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The piece of legislation that is before this House, Mr. Speaker, is actually putting decision-making back in the hands of communities across this province, Mr. Speaker. Health institutions, one end of Nova Scotia to the other, will have more say about the future. Community health boards' responsibilities will be enhanced, Mr. Speaker, and I can't for the life of me understand why the New Democratic Party would be opposed to making the healthcare system more accessible to more Nova Scotians and engaging more Nova Scotians in what they want in their community around healthcare.
Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I hope there's a 1-800 number to the CEO of the new amalgamated healthcare CEO, because she's going to be located in Halifax, Mr. Speaker. Earlier this month, the Deputy Minister of Health sent out a letter to healthcare workers across the province that read, "We recognize the upheaval this is causing. Right now, there are more questions than answers." And it goes on to ask for everyone's patience as they understand upheaval like this is difficult. So I'd like to ask the Premier, do you agree with the Deputy Minister of Health and recognize the upheaval that is going on in the healthcare sector because of this decision to amalgamate the district health authorities?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I've yet to have a single Nova Scotian tell me that when they have tried to access the healthcare system, or one of their loved ones have been trying to access the healthcare system, that they can't get a hold of the CEO of a district health authority, Mr. Speaker. What they have told me, though, Mr. Speaker, is that their hospital has been closed, Mr. Speaker. The emergency room has been closed. There are a lack of family physicians. What this bill does, Mr. Speaker, is streamlines the healthcare system, makes it more accessible, and allow Nova Scotians to get care anywhere in this province at the quickest possible time.
Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I would agree with the Premier, because those residents used to call those community leaders who volunteered on the boards that this government fired, Mr. Speaker. So they're going to have to call somebody, so they're going to call the CEO, I assume, Mr. Speaker. The Deputy Minister of Health is publicly apologizing, Mr. Speaker, apologizing. He's been on the job for a number of months. He's already apologizing for the scheme from this government. He's apologizing for the upheaval and the confusion the Liberal scheme is causing. So I'd like to ask the Premier, will the Premier finally stand up and apologize to healthcare workers for the upheaval his government has caused them?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to again say I don't know of a single Nova Scotian when they're not feeling well calls a CEO, and Mr. Speaker, I don't know of any Nova Scotian who would call a board member of any health authority when they're not feeling well, Mr. Speaker. They call a health care provider, Mr. Speaker, and what this piece of legislation is doing is allow communities to have more control and access about the institutions that are in their individual communities, and it is tearing down the walls, Mr. Speaker, that even that party knew when they were in government were too many, Mr. Speaker, and this is making it more accessible and sustainable for Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Natural Resources. Recently, we learned taxpayers spent $12,600 on pricey trips to Boston for the Minister of Natural Resources and his EA, all in the month of May. But then, after being questioned by the media, the minister came clean and admitted a third person joined them on one of their excursions at the last minute, the member for King South, a pretty good perk for a loyal Boston Red Sox fan. The cost to the taxpayers was an additional $1,900. My question, Mr. Speaker, for the minister is, why was the member of King South added to the trip on such short notice?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Mr. Speaker, I'll refer that question to the Minister of Economic, Rural Development and Tourism.
The Honourable Minister of Economic Development.
Mr. Speaker.
Order, please. The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development has the floor.
Well, they didn't do much in 4 years to answer any questions. It's surprising to hear they want to answer them now, Mr. Speaker. The fact is that due to a last-minute conflict, I wasn't able to attend to the ceremonies over in Boston to promote our province. I did ask the member for King South to attend on my behalf. It's my department that did pick up those costs. And in light of the fact that the member for King's North is concerned about costs, maybe he'd want to share with Nova Scotians what the costs were to taxpayers to send him to the Boston Seafood Show.
The Honourable Member for King's North on his first supplementary.
I will comment on the Boston Seafood Show. We were invited by the minister to attend, and we booked well ahead of time, and I actually flew a day later and came home a day later simply to save the taxpayers about $700-$800 on that trip. Mr. Speaker, when trying to defend his taxpayer-funded voyage, the member for King South told CTV News, "I attended a couple functions at Faneuil Hall with the minister, and I attended a baseball game and met with some tourism writers during the game." Mr. Speaker, are all expense-paid getaways how the Liberals keep backbench in line, or was the minister's executive assistant just not enough company for a Red Sox game?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Mr. Speaker, this is absolutely unbelievable. For 4 years after that NDP killed our ferry in Yarmouth, threw southwestern Nova Scotia in the lurch, that caucus stood with us fighting for the return of that ferry service because those members knew how important it was for this province, Mr. Speaker. And now, to gain cheap political shots, that member has the nerve to stand up and question the promotions that we need to do to make that ferry work for this province. Unbelievable, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member. The Honourable Member for King's North on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question would be, why didn't the minister take the ferry? I understand the Digby ferry would have run at that time and would have saved a considerable bit of money.
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Mr. Speaker, the simple answer to that question is the ferry wasn't running at that time. And that member buys into this foolishness. I'll tell you, Mr. Speaker, I wish these promotions weren't necessary for our ferry service to be successful, but we were thrown in the lurch. We had that market dead for 4 years because of the NDP. We received hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of promotions because of this trip, because of these promotions, Mr. Speaker. I don't apologize for doing my job and to working to make sure that ferry's a success.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In less than a year, the Liberal government has delivered two throne speeches. In November of last year, the Liberals spoke of the iconic Blue Nose 2 as if she was back in the water instead of steeped in cost overruns with her steering in shambles. I quote, "My government will join them in celebrating Blue Nose 2's return as Nova Scotia's sailing ambassador next spring as she helps to welcome the world to our shores." And I will table that statement. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Premier. How do you explain to Nova Scotians that after 19 million and counting, the Blue Nose 2 still isn't in the water, even though you promised a spring sailing?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I explain it by this. Mr. Speaker, the RFP was put out by a Conservative government and it's been managed for 4 years by a new Democratic government. Mr. Speaker, it'll be a Liberal government that gets that vessel sailing on behalf of all of us.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West on her first supplementary.
And double the expense. But, Mr. Speaker, sadly the vessel didn't play a role in this season's speech. Perhaps our sailing ambassador is no longer a priority to the Liberals. It certainly isn't a priority for the elected members of that side of the House who so willingly stand by and allow a non-elected bureaucrat to be the face of this file. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Premier. Has he lost all faith in his elected members to handle a file of this importance to Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I would remind the Honourable Member that the person she's referring to is a 32-year civil servant, Mr. Speaker, who has served in almost every department, Mr. Speaker, he has managed every major file, Mr. Speaker, not only under this government, under other governments. Mr. Speaker, I want to not only commend Mr. Darrow, but all civil servants who work on behalf of the people of the province of Nova Scotia for doing and coming to work every day, doing the very best they can to ensure the taxpayer dollars are being spent in the best possible way. And I want to remind, the Honourable Member, Mr. Speaker, that this file is with the Deputy Minister to the Premier of the province of Nova Scotia. Not only, Mr. Speaker, are we going to get this vessel sailing, we're going to have the Auditor General tell us how they got it so wrong in the beginning.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In early August, Nova Scotians learned that they had taken possession of the Blue Nose 2, despite the fact she was not sea-ready and did not have a stable or usable steering system. At the time, the Premier said the company responsible for restoring the vessel had satisfied the requirements outlined in its contract, which required the province to take possession of the ship of July 30th. Yet, a copy of the original contract states that delivery is made provided that, and I'll quote, all defects have been corrected to the satisfaction of the inspector, and I will table that. Mr. Speaker, my question again to the Premier is, does he not consider a failed steering system, which he himself confirmed to be a defect worth correcting before he took ownership of the vessel on behalf of taxpayers?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we have great craftsmen in this province, Mr. Speaker, and they did exactly what the RFP asked them for, Mr. Speaker. That government asked for a defective steering column, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Transportation. And on the ferries, according to a press release issued by the government in mid-July, the Torquil McLean Ferry in Victoria County was taken to dry dock in Pictou County for scheduled repairs. Mr. Speaker, I'll table that. Although it was just built in 2008, the ferry has had its share of problems. The tender for the work was awarded at $776,000, Mr. Speaker, and I'll table that as well. So my question to the Minister, why did the ferry have to go for scheduled repairs?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Mr. Speaker, I thank the member for the question. Obviously, the Torquil McLean, just like all of our fleet of ferries here in Nova Scotia, they require a certain number of maintenance. Obviously, as they age, the renovations and the dry dock work that's required is very important. So we set the schedule as best we can. There's no question about it that the Torquil McLean has had a significant number of issues. We've addressed those as best we can. There's certainly weather problems in that area that we have to deal with. The Torquil McLean is aging, no question about it. We use our fleet as best we can to manage all the traffic that's possible. So, Mr. Speaker, we're very aware of this situation. We're doing our best to deal with the challenges we have with respect to ferries in this province. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the government press release, it said the ferry was expected to be out of service for 10 weeks. In mid-July, it was swapped with the 30-year-old Scotian. Mr. Speaker, it'll be 10 weeks tomorrow. Can the minister explain to me when the Torquil McLean ferry will be back in service in Englishtown?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Mr. Speaker, again, the member brought up a point. Well, what we do when we have these required retrofits and work on the ferries as we swap out with our other fleet. So the Scotian has been there doing the work in that channel. It's been doing a tremendous job. The staff have been top-notch in keeping us informed on the not only the situation with the Scotian, but also with the renovations and the retrofit of the work being done with the Torkel McLean. Communications is important for us. We're doing our best to get that information updated and as accurate as possible. And as soon as the Torkel McLean is ready and the retrofit is done by AECON, we'll certainly communicate that to the public. Thank you.
The Honourable Minister, Member for Northside Westmount on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I had a lot of calls from residents of Northside Westmount who have either summer homes or travel English quite regularly to enjoy the National Park. This refit was originally scheduled for last September, but then it was delayed. It was done in mid-July during the height of the tourism season and put the ferry out of service for 3 days. Now it appears the actual refit is going to be delayed too. My question to the Minister is, how many times has the member of Victoria Lakes met with the Minister to raise concerns, and when will this ferry come back to service so that the people that have to go to Inganish to travel either for work or pleasure will enjoy this ferry again?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The member for Victoria of the Lakes talks to me daily about the Torkel McLean, about the Englishtown Ferry service. It's an issue. We've met recently with the municipality, the member and I, to talk about some of the issues with that service, with some of the options that exist for that corridor, Mr. Speaker. Obviously, you know, again, with our ferries, we've got an aging fleet. It's a very expensive proposition to keep the fleet going. However, safety is first and foremost for our government. We have to make sure, you know, we want to stick to the timelines as best we can, and obviously that's the challenge and that's the focus for the government. But at the end of the day, this is about having safe ferries on the water to transport passengers, transport tourists, and make sure that service is running safely and efficiently. So, Mr. Speaker, we'll certainly endeavour to get the Torkel McLean ready, and when that is, we'll certainly communicate that to the public. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, as you know, this government has a dismal record so far in creating jobs and opportunities for Nova Scotians. In fact, the last year alone, we have 9,000 fewer Nova Scotians working, Mr. Speaker. So the government's close for business sign remains firmly in place. Mr. Speaker, not only does the government need to create good opportunities to keep our young people at home and working, we need to keep our health care workers here and working. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Premier is this. How will your latest plan for the health care system help retain and attract valuable health care workers to Nova Scotia?
I'll just remind the member not to refer directly to the other members. The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do share the member's concern, Mr. Speaker. If you look over the last 4 years, there was a close for business sign in this province, Mr. Speaker. That sign is taken down. Nova Scotia private sector clearly has... Speaker, Nova Scotia's private sector clearly understands their roles, clearly understands that government is not going to interfere and pit one Nova Scotia employer against another Nova Scotia employer, Mr. Speaker. They know this government is not going to subsidize one employer over another, Mr. Speaker. They know that they're on an even playing field, and they're excited about the possibilities, Mr. Speaker, of growing good jobs in the private sector in the province of Nova Scotia. And I want to ensure the Honourable Member, Mr. Speaker, that health care providers, health care workers across this province are applying for jobs to stay in this province, Mr. Speaker, because they know it's a great place to work. They know the system is a great place to work in, Mr. Speaker, and this bill does nothing, Mr. Speaker, but improve that situation.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Thank you very much, and I think the operative clause was this place was a good place for health care workers in the province, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we know that the Liberal government in the 1990s drove health care workers away. Specifically, nurses left this province in very large numbers due to the unfair treatment and wage rollbacks that occurred. Now here we are, Mr. Speaker, where this government is once again attacking nurses and frontline caregivers, Mr. Speaker, and they may not be interested in picking one employer over another, but they don't have any difficulty in picking one union over another, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Premier is this. Why is the Premier repeating history and creating chaos in the healthcare sector that will result in the loss of healthcare workers from our province?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to remind the leader of the NDP, it was her party, Mr. Speaker, that took away the right to strike for paramedics in this province. Mr. Speaker, this piece of legislation, Mr. Speaker, tears down the walls inside of our province, allows mobility of healthcare workers, Mr. Speaker. Everything that has been earned by a healthcare worker across this province will remain the same. The four categories that are being referred to in this piece of legislation were supported by the union leaders, Mr. Speaker. And the chaos and the confusion that is happening in and around this piece of legislation, Mr. Speaker, is being driven for political motivation, nothing more.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, healthcare workers are the backbone of the healthcare system. They play a significant role in a healthy economy. But, Mr. Speaker, we are right now seeing history repeat itself with this Liberal government. So my question to the Premier is this. Why would any healthcare worker want to stay in Nova Scotia after all the mistreatment this Liberal government has caused in just 1 year in government?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure where the leader of the NDP gets her information, but we hired every nurse who graduated from CBU this year, Mr. Speaker. Does that sound like people are driving people away? Mr. Speaker, the system has hired nurses from every nursing class in the province in this year, Mr. Speaker. How is that driving healthcare workers away? Mr. Speaker, what this is about is tearing down the walls in the healthcare system, ensuring that workers have protected the things they've earned at the bargaining table, making sure that they will be able to do open, free, collective bargaining into the future, at the same time making sure that this system is sustainable in the long run for all Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, again, my question is to the Minister of Transportation. The Scotia was brought in to replace the Torkel McLean for the summer. It's more than 30 years old and could not carry as many passengers as the Torkel McLean. On August 6th and 7th, it was put out of service in peak tourism season. And Mr. Speaker, I'll table that. On September 18th, it went out of service again and was out for 9 days. And Mr. Speaker, the people in the area realized there was no government press release notifying the public. So my question to the Minister is, why was the Scotia out of service last week?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Mr. Speaker, again, thank the member of the opposite for the question. The reality is that we're dealing with an aging fleet. The renovations and retrofit that they require can be very certainly time-consuming and extremely expensive, Mr. Speaker. We do our very best to manage it. Obviously, the member opposite, the entire House and all Nova Scotians understand the fiscal challenges that we have. And again, with ferries, it's keeping them safe and secure. That's the focus. Torkel McLean has been in existence for 7 years. It's never been dry docked up to this point. There is a number of issues that we've had over the last 12 months. We're doing our very best to address it. The Scotian has served as a very adequate substitute to this point. Again, Mr. Speaker, we have no control over when breakdowns and issues are going to occur, and we do our best to manage them as they arise. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, at the same time, the Coalist Silas was out of service in Little Narrows. There was no government press release communicating that to the public either. And Mr. Speaker, we get calls on that all the time of why. So my question again is, what was the reason for the ferry in Little Narrows to be out of service as well?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Mr. Speaker, again, certainly there are issues of maintenance and issues of breakdowns with the ferries, no question. I know that one of the, for me as a minister and for us as a government, there's certainly learning experiences that we have. One thing we've learned from the Tancook Ferry situation, Mr. Speaker, is that residents, over and above everything else, they require communications. I know that the member opposite said he's been contacted many times about the Narrows Ferry. I certainly take that seriously, and I think that if it's a communications issue, then by all means we can talk about that. Getting these boats in the water safely and efficiently is certainly what we focus on, but again, it comes down to communications and letting people know. So if that's a specific issue with this run, then we'll endeavour to improve that service. Thank you very much.
Honourable Member for Northside Westmount on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Tancook Island residents are voicing their ferry frustrations as well. They rely on their ferry service to get on and off the island. Their passenger service was downgraded this summer from 95 to only 45 people per trip. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister is the plan to replace the Tancook Island Ferry with the Scotian, and when?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Mr. Speaker, thank you very much. And again, I did mention the Tancook Ferry issue. Certainly is one that was brought to our attention. It is very significant as it affects many people in the Tancook Islands, Chester area. I know that the member for Chester St. Margaret's has suggested that we put together a committee to talk about some of those issues. That's certainly something we would be willing to do. I've spoken on a number of occasions with the Mayor, Don Down, who pulled together the initial public meeting. There was issues with the service. There's issues with communications, and it's an important service that we have. With respect to the Tancook situation, these were compliance issues based on Transport Canada's new legislation that came in April of 2012 with respect to some of the damage mitigation instruments we have on the ferry. We're working with our federal counterparts at this point to make sure we're in compliance. The current permit that we're under runs till November. We're looking to figure out these problems before then, get that vessel to dry dock in May of 2015, and make the required changes. Mr. Speaker, this is a significant service. There are significant costs involved, so we just want to make sure we get it right for the people of Tancook and for all Nova Scotians. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
My question is for the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, the throne speech talked about doing things differently. My question, why doesn't this government at least look at an option for a CT scanner that offers lower radiation, that does not require children to be sedated, and that gives doctors in rural areas the tools they can use to save lives, and quite possibly, Mr. Speaker, save money? And I know from my speaking with the Chief of Staff, he's talked about technology which gives him the ability to see things more quickly and the ability to diagnose people more quickly, which may, in fact, save money, Mr. Speaker, on the side of the equation where people either are faced with going into a nursing home to live out the rest of their days or being able to function as they always have. So, Mr. Speaker, why won't this government at least look at the option?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And we gave more than just a passing glance to the Atlantic Medical Images Trillium CT scanner. We actually invited them into the Department of Health to discuss the new scanner they were bringing to the province. I also went out, along with the Deputy Minister and others, to take a look at the operations in Bedford. However, this is about a proper process, a proper procedure, and one that could be very much a part of the future, and one that we will continue to take a look at. From the point of view of economics, this particular deal made zero sense. In fact, it doesn't even come close to what we can do by actually purchasing a GE scanner for Inverness or any other part of the province. Radiologists at the IWK and the QE2 are fine with the equipment they have. They said there's no problem where we are at this point in time. But this is a process that could very well be examined in the future.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I want this legislature to know that we did try to approach this government quietly. Myself and the Chief of Staff, I remember the day that I called the Premier's office. And I don't call the Premier's office very often, Mr. Speaker. We also directed a letter to the Minister of Health. And sadly, Mr. Speaker, we didn't get a reply until the day after the current scanner that was purchased for the hospital was delivered to the hospital. The hospital wasn't even ready to receive it. So, Mr. Speaker, I think the minister talks about there was a process, but really there was a process with no transparency. When people in the community asked for the numbers behind the scanner, the government refused to provide them. So, Mr. Speaker, why is the government playing games?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've talked to some of the people in Inverness, some of the people in the medical community, who are extraordinarily happy that a CT scanner is coming to their hospital. And in fact, it is going to provide now the kind of diagnostic work that people will not have to go to Antigonish or Sydney, especially during winter months. It's going to give quick diagnostic results for surgeons, as well as the entire medical community in that area. The process led by Diane Calvert-Sims and her team is a very ordinary part of procurement. When we want to take a look at whether or not there will be some private dimension of providing diagnostic equipment in our hospitals, that's a big decision for the Department of Health that could be very well explored. But in terms of this particular purchase, the entire process was done as it should be done.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this government and its bureaucracy got scared of a new idea. Plain and simple. The medical community itself, Mr. Speaker, was never allowed. What we kept hearing was they weren't allowed to participate. Now, this is before this government took office. But the medical community, as we know, Mr. Speaker, they know who their employer is. They have to be very careful what they say. One of the things I will state for the record is neither Dr. Play or myself would ever suggest that the people working at the hospital now shouldn't be the people operating with this new potential CT scanner. So if the same people are operating it, I really don't see what the fear is in at least looking at the idea. So, Mr. Speaker, it is the technology that the chief of staff of the hospital wants. Our doctors are aging. We need to attract new doctors. They're going to want to work with new equipment. Mr. Speaker, we saw what happened in Antigonish recently with Dr. Silver. He had to go public and make a complaint publicly to get the government to act. Is this what we have to do? Is this what doctors around the province have to do to get the attention of the government? So, Mr. Speaker, why doesn't the government work with doctors to provide them the equipment they need, and equipment that very well, if the government will show the transparency behind its numbers, we may actually be able to prove that these new options can actually save money for the system?
Order, please. Time allotted for oral questions by members to ministers has expired. We'll now move on to government business. The Honourable Government House Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, would you please call second reading of Bill Number 1, the Health Authorities Act.
We'll now have second reading of Bill Number 1, the Health Authorities Act. I recognize the Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that Bill Number 1, the Health Authorities Act, be now read a second time. Mr. Speaker, it's no secret that our government has always intended to move from 10 health authorities to 2, but this bill is much more than numbers. It's about improving the quality of patient care.